You know, 10 months ago, we made a decision to redefine our direction. We knew there would be ups and downs this season. We knew that we would encounter some things that were going to be difficult, and we did. With that said, I think we're in a better place today than we were at this time last year. And I think we have an opportunity to grow as an organization starting today.
Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA.
Levine, he goes right. Oh!
Stop it, Sampson! Did you not get the memo?
Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA.
Here's Enes Kanter, what are you doing? The finisher in New York City.
Your number one source for Chicago Bulls news and stories.
We're going to preach patience. Doesn't mean we're not going to be looking for ways to get better, but a lot of it's going to come internally. We need Zach LaVine to be a better basketball player. Chris Dunn to come back a better player. Lauri Markkanen, Bobby Portis, you go down the line. They have to put in the time, and confident that they will.
So kick back, relax, and get ready for the best hour of your day.
Like I said at the beginning, I feel better today about our direction and our position than I did a year ago.
Locked On Bulls. Bulls starts now. Here are your hosts, Jordan Malley and Matt Peck.
What's up and welcome into Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. I'm your host, Matt Peck, also host of Bulls Outsiders on NBC Sports Chicago and the 312 on AM 1590 WCGO. We're live on Dash Radio, Locked On Bulls, every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. Follow us on social media, on Twitter and Instagram, at Locked On Bulls, on Facebook, at facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls. Be sure to follow Locked On Bears, Locked On Cubs, and the Locked On Podcast Network on social media as well. My co-host Jordan Malley is out for today's episode. He is still making his way back from some holiday traveling, but he will be back joining me for a fresh start to a fresh week and a new year when we roll around to next week's episodes. Bulls have two more games left on the docket here in 2018 tonight against the Wizards in Washington and then going north of the border to take on the Raptors in Toronto. Really looking forward to my guy Mark Shinowski of NBC Sports Chicago's pre and post jumping in and filling in for Neil Funk on one of the many road games that he's taken off this season, doing play-by-play alongside Stacey King. So that should be something fun for us on Sunday. As I said, Jordan is out, so I'll just be doing a quick solo pod today, breaking down the Bulls-Minnesota Timberwolves game from earlier this week, and also talking a little bit about the return of Derrick Rose to the United Center, his very dominant game, and the fans' reaction, and sort of where we are now as far as a fan base and our relationship to the person that is Derrick Rose and the nostalgia that surrounds him, and the team and the player that never quite was here in Chicago, because a lot of people we're feeling all kinds of feelings watching Derrick Rose do his thing at the United Center earlier this week, and even hearing some MVP chants from the Chicago faithful. So with that, let's first dive in to the blowout loss to Minnesota. 119-94 was the final score. The Bulls dug themselves a hole early. They trailed 29-18 after the first quarter, got outscored 31-19 in the second. They did play well, I thought, in the third quarter, which they actually ended up winning by a 5-point margin to kind of keep themselves in it a little bit. But then Minnesota pretty much kept them at bay for the entirety of the fourth. As I said, I liked what I saw in the third quarter. There was a combination of Zach LaVine doing his thing, and it was nice to see him back after a 5-game absence with that sprained ankle. I'm honestly a little bit surprised that he came back so quickly. It was 14 days since his ankle injury, and the Bulls gave us a window of 2 to 4 weeks. So given this team and their predicament right now and their record and the fact that they clearly value Zach LaVine highly as a piece of this rebuilding team, I thought that they would play it safe, and I thought it would be closer towards the four-week part of that 2 to 4 week timeline. But lo and behold, LaVine was back after 2 weeks. And Jim Boylan did say that Zach would be back in the starting lineup tonight against Washington, but I thought it was peculiar. much like Fred Hoiberg did with Lauri Markkanen when he made his comeback, bringing him off the bench in his first game. Jim Boylan did the same thing with Chris Dunn, bringing him off the bench in his first game back from injury. And Boylan did it again with Zach LaVine against the Timberwolves on Wednesday. Like, what? I'm not quite sure what the point is. If the guy is healthy enough to play, then you play him and you start him. He was clearly on a bit of a minutes restriction, playing just 26 minutes, did Zach LaVine against Minnesota. But, you know, maybe there was some extra motivation for LaVine to want to come back and play against his former team. Certainly that may have been a driving factor because everybody always gets a little extra juiced and amped up for those games, which is maybe part of why he hurried back and was back after just the two-week absence. But, I mean, to me, if I'm Jim Boylan, if Zach LaVine is telling me I'm healthy enough to play and maybe we're going to take it easy and you only want to play him 26 minutes, fine. But play him those 26 minutes as a starter. And it all goes back to what Jordan and I have talked about a lot in this season full of injuries, which is the frustrating aspect of trying to see where we are in this rebuild and where these young players are as individuals, but more importantly, as a unit, when you're talking about the trade pieces of Chris Dunn, Lauri Markkanen, and Zach LaVine, and the fact that they only played, you know, 10, 11 games together last season in short little spurts and small sample sizes. And this was just the, you know, I don't know, fourth or fifth time they've played together, all three of them active in the same game this season, given all their various injuries. So, like, to me, playing Zach LaVine minutes on the bench with that second unit, like, what purpose does that serve? If he's healthy enough to play, you play him with LaVine, and you play him with Dunn, you play him with Markkanen, because you need to see those guys develop some kind of chemistry. And again, they did share the floor for a stretch of time in this game against the Wolves. And once again, it wasn't pretty. We keep talking about a small sample size here, small sample size there. But the net rating of those three players was once again a net negative against the Timberwolves. There is this weird, feeling that, like, Zach LaVine can have a good game. But if Zach LaVine has a good game, then Markkanen kind of ghosts a little bit. We saw Chris Dunn develop some nice chemistry with Wendell Carter Jr. As I said, in that third quarter, that was primarily the Zach LaVine show. He was attacking the basket and pouring in points. But when it wasn't Zach LaVine, it was Chris Dunn and Wendell Carter Jr. playing a little two-man game, which was nice to see. Jordan and I were just talking earlier this week about how it's been frustrating to see Wendell Carter Jr. kind of disappear from this team on the offensive end. But Wendell Carter, 6 of 11, 12 points in the loss to Minnesota. And you saw some nice pick-and-roll action. You saw some Chris Dunn lobs to Wendell, who was rolling to the hoop. It was fun to see. So maybe there's some chemistry developing there with our point guard and our young center, but still very little chemistry with Zach LaVine and Lauri Markkanen. And those are the two guys that we always talk about as the two biggest and most important pieces. Fans aren't sold on Chris Dunn being the starting point guard of the future yet. Fans know that Wendell Carter Jr. is still very young and has a lot of ways to go before being a really, much of a weapon on the offensive end. It's Markkanen and LaVine, and those two, again, in this game, looked like they had very little chemistry. I mean, LaVine did pour in 28 points on 10 of 17 shooting in 26 minutes. That's a pretty darn efficient night for LaVine. Didn't do much else. He did have two assists, but, you know, wasn't really doing a whole lot of distributing in this game. He was clearly just looking to score. Markkanen, in 32 minutes as a starter, 6 of 14 for 16 points. So that's not nothing, but it's not necessarily about the box score. It's about the fact that the ability that Jim Boylan could have at his fingertips to play a two-man game with LaVine and Markkanen. You run a high screen and roll with those two players who can both shoot from outside and who can both beat guys off the dribble and get to the rim. LaVine with his speed and Markkanen with decent handles and a great stride for a guy his size. Why are they not doing that? Especially a coach like Jim Boylan, who is slowed this Bulls offense down to a grinding halt with his "we're going to do it the old-fashioned way" to quote-unquote, you know, maximize efficiency on the offensive end. We haven't seen a whole lot of that yet. You know, Robin Lopez got up 13 shots against Minnesota. What the heck is going on there? But, I mean, the high screen and roll, the two-man game, is something that has existed and worked at the NBA level for decades. And teams still use it intelligently, spliced into the other, you know, putting emphasis on three-point shooting and this fast-paced offense and this run-and-gun stuff that Fred, you know, was trying to get going here in Chicago. But, I mean, a two-man high screen and roll with LaVine and Markkanen should be simple as pie. And we've barely seen it yet from Jim Boylan, which to me just doesn't make any sense with what we know about Jim Boylan and how he likes to, quote-unquote, run his, quote-unquote, offense. So that was a worry to me in this game against Minnesota. And another 20-point loss added on to the pile. We got to take a break here on Locked On Bulls. When we come back, we will talk about the other guys that were on the floor on the United Center earlier this week, the old Timberwolves. That's next. Stay tuned. Welcome back to Locked On Bulls. Your host, Matt Peck, holding down the fort while Jordan Malley is still making his way back to Chicago after some holiday travel. So I'm doing a little bit of a solo show today. We'll have Jordan back in the fold for Monday's show. Talked in our first segment about the curiosity of what Jim Boylan is doing and more so not doing on the offensive end for the Bulls when he does have both Markkanen and LaVine at his disposal, and the fact that they haven't really shown any kind of chemistry yet in the small sample size this season, which was, of course, a big concern of ours last season. As far as the Timberwolves, they beat the Bulls handily earlier this season with a similar lineup. The Bulls played them, after the trade went down, the Jimmy trade, and they got Dario Saric and Covington in from the Sixers. And in that first game, Covington and Wiggins, I want to say, combined to shoot like 1 for 30 or something crazy like that, and the Wolves still won handily because of the dominance of Karl-Anthony Towns and Derrick Rose, who had a pretty good game off the bench in that one. And essentially, it was the same story, but a little bit different earlier this week when these teams faced off again, this time in Chicago. Covington and Wiggins, not quite that bad, but not a great collective effort from them. Wiggins, 5 of 15 for 14 points. Covington, 3 of 13 for 8 points. So combined to go 8 for 28. Not great there. Taj Gibson doing his normal role player thing at that starting front court spot. He chipped in 16 points on a very efficient 6 of 9, adding 3 rebounds and 2 assists. Always nice to see Taj. And I loved the anecdote he told talking to the media before that game about how some garbage truck truck driver like spotted Taj on the street in Chicago the night before and waved him down, and Taj, ended up just chatting with the guy for a while, and that was just quintessential Taj Gibson and quintessential Chicago sports fan. He's always had love from this Bulls fan base, along with Joakim being one of those, hard hat and lunch pail guys, as Stacey King would always say with Taj. And it's great that he's found success in a new environment in the NBA and is certainly still a very important piece on a team that's trying to make their way into their second consecutive playoff berth. So nice to see Taj, and the guy always gets a warm reception since he left the Bulls. As for Karl-Anthony Towns, I mentioned he dominated the Bulls the first time around. I think he had like a 35-20 game, something crazy like that. Not quite as extreme this time around, but he did put up 20 points and 20 rebounds, just absolutely abusing the Bulls in the paint. Which, again, very much like what we saw the first time around when these two teams faced off. But the difference here was that Jeff Teague is out nursing, I believe, an inflammation in his ankle. And so the guy who usually has been the starting point guard for the Wolves this season was on the shelf. And Derrick Rose, who came off the bench the first time these teams saw each other, was the starting point guard for the Minnesota Timberwolves. And he made good use of his time and that role. He, classic Tibbs, played 38 minutes as the starting point guard for the Wolves, finished with 24 points on 11 of 19 shooting, and dished out 8 assists, had 2 steals, and a couple of turnovers. So a very strong game from Derek, who could have even poured in more, or perhaps hit the 30-point mark had he knocked down more of his threes. because that's an element that he's really added to his game this season. Derek was never a good three-point shooter when he was with the Bulls. He would occasionally knock down a big three here or there, but it was all about attacking the basket. Knowing as he's aged and he's had to adjust to what his body can and can't do, we've really seen Derrick Rose explode as far as his efficiency behind the three-point line this season. In this game, however, he was just one of five. So it could have been an even more dominant night from Rose had his outside shot been falling, but the other 10 of his field goals were all over the floor inside the three-point line. He was hitting the classic Derrick Rose floaters in the lane. He was going glass from elbow jumpers. He was attacking the basket, getting layups, going reverse, going up and under, doing all this beautiful stuff that we used to see Derrick Rose do with such explosiveness in his young age. And for a Bulls fan base right now that is just desperate for anything to feel good about, it was certainly a packed and raucous environment at the United Center. You could tell there was just an added amount of energy compared to the average Bulls home game this season because people were there to see the Bulls. Yeah, sure, whatever. People showed up to see Derrick Rose play. And that is something that this fan base will always feel towards Derrick Rose and about Derrick Rose. And it's nice that after a rocky stint in New York, and then I'm not sure if he and the Cavs came to town before the Cavs traded him away last season, but it wasn't quite the same because he was kind of an irrelevant piece on, what was a bad Knicks team and then very much LeBron James's team, and LeBron controlled all the headlines for Derek's short stint in Cleveland. But this is like, yeah, the Timberwolves are a borderline 500 team in a very stacked Western Conference. So they're not like a huge storyline now that the Jimmy saga is over, but they're still relevant. And Derrick Rose playing well definitely makes them relevant and makes them an interesting storyline around the league. But here in Chicago, it is a very different feeling. And I feel differently about it too. And we're going to get into that right on the other side of this break. You're listening to Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. The Bulls fans and their relationship with Derrick Rose right after this. Stay tuned. Welcome back to Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Friday, December 28th. Wow, how did that happen? I'm your host, Matt Peck. Jordan Malley is out, but he will be back on Monday as we get ready to bring in the new year here on Locked On Bulls. And hopefully a new year brings some good news or a fresh start of some kind after the Bulls' rebuild year two has gotten completely derailed by injuries and some coaching chaos so far this season. It's been an interesting few months. So because of all of the unpleasant drama going around this Bulls team and the losses on top of losses on top of losses, after the loss of the Wolves, the Bulls now sit at 9-26, which not great. One of the worst teams in the league. So I got into a bit of hot water from some Bulls fans after the Bulls and Wolves game earlier this week on our episode of Bulls Outsiders. We talked about the MVP chance that Derrick Rose got and the warm reception from Bulls fans at the United Center. And look, you could call it a hot take if you want to, but I was honestly just speaking my mind. And I was talking about how I think that there is a significant portion of this Bulls fan base that has an unhealthy obsession with Derrick Rose. And I tried to, as best I could, eloquently say why I feel that way and try and make clear that I'm not some Rose hater. I, in fact, was a pretty vocal Derrick Rose supporter as things started to go south at the back end of his tenure here with the Bulls. When people were throwing him under the bus for silly quotes that he gave to the media just because the kid's never really been good at that kind of thing, and people hammering him for not coming back and playing in the playoffs in 2013 after missing the whole year with an ACL tear, I stood up for him and defended him about that. I was definitely defending Derrick Rose from a lot of the naysayers, and it got to a point when I thought it was the right move for Derek and it was the right move for the Bulls for everybody to part ways and move on. The championship window had closed. Everybody needed a fresh start. Derek wasn't happy. The Bulls weren't happy with the fact that, you know, they kind of wasted that max contract that he inked, and they didn't really get anything out of it. There was just kind of bitterness and resentment all over the place, and the whole Reggie Rose factor. Like, it was time to move on. I think most Bulls fans at least could understand that, if not completely support it. And here we are now. Fast forward a few years, Derrick Rose has managed to fight his way back into being a interesting and relevant person and player in this league. And he poured 24 points and eight assists in a dominant win over his former Bulls at the United Center, and the crowds went nuts for him. MVP chance at the free throw line. It was, I mean, honestly, made your heart feel good. I enjoyed seeing it. It was nice. But the point I tried to make on Bulls Outsiders after the fact was, you can feel good about Derrick Rose, and you can be happy for him that despite everything he's battled through, he's back in the league and he's playing at a high level. And you can remember those times fondly. 22-year-old MVP, the 62-20 team that was Tibbs' first year at the helm. And they went all the way to the conference finals and lost to the big three in Miami. And if you are a younger Bulls fan, that's the best season you know. If you're too young to remember the dynasty of the 90s, then that season and Derrick Rose's MVP season is the most significant thing you have as far as positive, pleasant memories being a part of this fan base. And I understand that, and I get that. And it's not like I'm trying to say that, oh, you can't feel nostalgic about Derrick Rose and a team that only made it as far as Game 5 of the conference finals. Let's all pump the brakes on nostalgia there. Like, what exactly are we being nostalgic for? And you know, my buddy Big Dave on Outsider said, it's not just about that. It's about what Derrick has always meant to this city, being a kid who, you know, the Rose who grew from concrete, Southside Chicago, played at Simeon, you know, grew up in Inglewood, drafted number one by his hometown team. I get all of that. But I'm saying that I think, is part of what makes an unhealthy relationship between that one player and this fan base who just can't let him go. It's hard to be optimistic about this rebuild right now. We don't know what we have, largely because, as I was saying earlier, we haven't seen the core play together much, and there's been all sorts of injuries that have derailed this rebuild. That stinks, and it's hard to be optimistic about it. So, you know, those Rose stands who clap back at me and said, come on, man, like, it's something we can feel good about. Like, don't take this away from us and don't poo-poo it, because, like, this team, this Bulls team right now is hard to root for. Nay, impossible to root for. They're garbage. They stink. You know, the front office needs to be fired. And on and on and on it went. I got a lot of heat saying, this team isn't worth rooting for right now. Derrick Rose is worth rooting for. Let us root for Derrick Rose. Let us talk about the good old days. Let us talk about... And I stop you when you say, let us talk about bringing Derrick Rose back to the Bulls. No. That is where I stop you, and that is where I say, this is why I feel like it's an unhealthy relationship between the fan base and Derrick Rose. Do you honestly think it's a good idea to bring that guy back after everything he went through here, after everything that he put the fan base through, and vice versa? The huge amount of expectations and the heavy burden on his shoulders to bring this team back to the mountaintop, to get this team their seventh title and restore their place at the top of the league. First person to do it since Michael Jeffrey Jordan, the greatest of all time. Derrick fell short of those expectations because of mostly injuries and a supporting cast that wasn't quite good enough when they had their best opportunity to get there. I don't trust this Bulls fan base, and I'm sorry if you think that's insulting to you, if you feel this way and do want to see Derrick Rose back. I don't trust this Bulls fan base to not put too much of a pressure and a heavy burden on Derrick Rose's shoulders once again. And guess what? The first sign of a knee injury or a sore ankle, we weren't sure if Derrick Rose was going to play earlier this week because their previous game against the Thunder, he sat out with a sore ankle. Yes, Derrick Rose is playing right now, and it's fun to see, and we can be happy for him. Happy that he's playing well. But if he were to come back to Chicago and suffer another injury, I don't want to see the fan base do that to him again. I don't want to see him do that to the fan base again. That's why I say it's an unhealthy relationship, because the what if is so powerful. What if Derrick Rose never tears his ACL? What if that Bulls championship window stayed open and Derrick Rose and Jimmy Butler got along and were both all-stars on the same team for years in a row? Maybe at some point they could have knocked off LeBron, whether it was Miami or Cleveland. And maybe they could have, you know, gotten past whoever it was, you know, from the Western Conference. I don't know about that. I really have my doubts, even if Derrick Rose stayed healthy, if this team was ever good enough to win a championship. But I get that the what if is powerful. But to me, it shouldn't be so powerful that the fan base is blinded to the reality of what we have now with this rebuild. Trying, as hard as it might be, to see the optimism of this rebuild. Focus on how are our young core players developing? How can they get better? Where can their games improve? What do we see from them on a nightly basis that we actually like, that we can take positives away from moving forward? That is, I think, a healthy focus of energy as far as what you want to do with this season that is essentially already in the gutter with, you know, our last place Bulls. What can you positively find from this season as a fan? Focus on the core that we have. And skeptical and cynical as you might be about the moves that are coming from the front office or lack thereof, I'm right with you there. Try and get excited about the young players on our team, because there's no point in driving yourself crazy saying, oh, what if Derrick Rose? Hey, look, Derrick Rose is playing pretty well. Maybe we should bring Derrick Rose back. Bring him home. I see so many tweets from Bulls Twitter. Bring him home. MVP chance. He looks like old Rose, aka young Rose, diving around all over the United Center, scoring all over the floor. Bring him home. What happens when it falls apart again? Inevitably, what happens when he falls short of your crazy, lofty expectations? That's not what this fan base needs right now. They need to put Derrick Rose behind them. And you could say, he's always Chicago. He will always be Chicago. Somebody tweeted me like, he is ours. He will always be ours. Well, okay, technically, you're wrong. He plays for a different franchise right now. Hasn't played for this franchise in several years. I get what you're saying. He'll always be Chicago's. Yeah, fine. But there is a point at which I feel like that level of nostalgia and that feeling like, as a Bulls fan and as the city of Chicago, like, we own Derrick Rose and he'll always be ours. And we always hearken back to the good old days when our young native son was the MVP of the league. I mean, wishes and wants in one hand and shit in the other. See which one fills up faster. That's why I'm saying that. The Rose obsession, it's nice. Memory lane is nice. Getting a nice standing ovation. Being introduced is from Chicago, just like the good old days. MVP chance at the free throw line. It was all fun and good. But there comes a point when, if you honestly believe that it is in this team's best interest to bring that guy back and go through all this all over again, that it becomes an unhealthy relationship with the past, when our focus should be on the present and the future. That's my point. And honestly, I'd love to hear yours. If you are a Rose stan, if you are not, regardless of how you feel about Derrick Rose, if you agree with me or if you staunchly disagree with me, I'd love to hear your take. So, as always, that text and voicemail line is open 24/7, 365. 331-979-1369. Again, that number is 331-979-1369. Give us your texts and your voicemails. Tell us how you feel about Derrick Rose and his return to Chicago, and his very strong game, and his MVP chant love that he got from the Chicago faithful. And whether or not you think that the Bulls fan base has a healthy relationship with Derrick Rose and the legend and the myth of those years. And if you honestly think it's a good idea for the Bulls to bring him back, I'd love to hear your thoughts, because you've heard mine. 331-979-1369. That is it. Have a great weekend. Bulls Wizards tip off tonight at 6 o'clock, and then we have a 5 p.m. tip off Sunday. Mark Schanowski on the call with Stacey King up north, taking on Kawhi and the Raptors. For my co-host Jordan Malley, who will be back on Monday, Matt Peck saying thanks as always for listening to Locked On Bulls. Appreciate you, Bulls Nation. We will talk to you on Monday. In the meantime, have a great weekend. Keep enjoying the holidays. Talk to you then.
Once in a while, one of the kids caught us as lit or dope or whatever it is, but it's all those things.
Locked On Bulls, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA. Locked On Bulls is live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, starting at 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central. For more content and to stay up to date, head over to LockedOnBulls.com.